The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov, a long life to Dr. Mime, Dr. Weinberg. Unfortunately, no incisive quotes from me, but certainly some excitement going on in the world of politics in Israel, that's for sure.
So what is going on in politics in Israel?
Well, the focus really has all shifted today to the issue of elections. And are we going to go to elections? I know we spoke about it yesterday, but really that is the main focus of the day today. And the ironic situation is that it seems as if though the blue and white party headed by Benny Gantz, who is a member of the governing coalition, is going to be the one to bring the government down. And there were some mad scrambles yesterday to try to somehow head off an election. The interests are interesting, the various objectives of the different parties. Prime Minister Netanyahu is doing whatever he can to achieve two main things. First of all, to keep the government together, and second of all, for him to remain as Prime Minister, which of course he would do even in the event that an election was called today, but obviously that would be in a caretaker capacity, which would be just a temporary situation. Benny Gantz, it seems, has lost the interest to keep the government together, even though that's really his only opportunity to become Prime Minister if that rotation takes place as it is planned late next year. Excuse me. So Benny Gantz, I think, has come to the point where he's saying, I have no more interest to keep this government together because I can't see my turn coming when the rotation is due to take place. There will be other factors that will come into play that will prevent me from taking up the position as Prime Minister. If that is the situation, if that is the way that I see things a year ahead of when the rotation is due to take place, then we might as well bring the government down now. And we might as well go to elections now, because as I discussed yesterday, it seems that the popularity of the Likud and Prime Minister Netanyahu has reached something of a low point. And so therefore, if an election was held now, that it would potentially weaken the Likud and the Prime Minister. Mm. So it's going to be interesting to see how the vote goes today. In the meantime, the Finance Minister Yisrael Katz yesterday published a timetable for the approval of the budgets, which is really the main sticking point here and the point over which the vote of no confidence is due to take place today, because a budget is due to be approved. Yisrael Katz, the finance minister, published his timetable saying this is when the budgets will be approved, a date for the approval of the 2020 budget, a date for the first and second readings of the 2021 budget, and final approval of the 2021 budget. So he's publicly committed to bring the budgets to the Knesset pretty much in line with the latest agreements, and there have been a number of different agreements about a budget timetable, but pretty much in line with that, in an attempt again to support the Prime Minister and to head off the possibility of an election. But as I read the situation today, the head of the opposition, Yair Lapid, is due to introduce a vote of no confidence to the Knesset. It seems as if though from within the governing coalition, Benny Gantz and his blue and white party will support the vote of no confidence in the government, and that by the end of today, we will effectively be back on an election footing, unless something very dramatic happens today in the Knesset, in the Prime Minister's office, which is difficult to foresee at the moment, but one cannot rule it out, because a day in the life of Israeli politics is usually quite a strange thing and quite expected. The Prime Minister may well have some tricks up his sleeve, but some people are predicting that the Knesset dispersal bill, which is due to be introduced today, will be something of an anticlimax, because it'll just go with a pop. There'll be no real dramatics. It will just be voted. And we will go into an election. So this time tomorrow, Howard, we'll have this discussion about whether we're back on elections again or not. And the election, if it is voted today, I think is due to take place within 3 months. I'm guessing that a proposed date has already been diarized for a potential election. I'm not aware of what the date will be, but I'm guessing someone's already thought about these things. And just a really another crazy situation for us. The Prime Minister, of course, trying to appeal to people, the public, by saying, we need this government for the economics of the country to manage the corona situation. You know, he's now gone into public relations mode, which is really the best thing that he can do. But it's not up to the citizens of Israel to make this decision today. And in truth, I think that if there was a referendum held today as to whether we should go to an election or not, I suspect that the referendum would be in favor of an election today. That's just my suspicion.
What's more fascinating to me, Anthony, and I don't know if people in Israel are looking at this question or asking this question, is what does this all say about Israeli politics, government, and leadership? The fact that this is the, I don't know, what number is this? Four.
Within a very short period of time.
Is anybody stopping to say, hold on a minute, this is saying something. And maybe we need to take a serious look at ourselves, whether it's government leadership, the style, some of the intrinsic issues that are going on. It isn't normal for a country or productive for a country to have four elections in such a short period of time, surely.
I absolutely agree with you. And in fact, this whole discussion about the style of government in Israel has long been a topic of conversation, because let's be honest, Israel has really never had a stable government in its history. All the time, all the governments that have been formed have been coalition governments. There's never been a party that has earned a simple majority from an election. They've always had to cobble together coalitions. Those coalitions inevitably come with parties and people who wield authority, not authority, but who wield influence, which is way beyond the support that they get at the polls, because they are the kingmakers. They are the ones who ultimately get the right to put the government together. Or, you know, they have the casting vote, as it were, the balance of power. Inevitably, there's been a lot of criticism of the religious parties who are willing to join a government almost at any price, no matter what the political considerations are, just as long as their religious institutions are budgeted accordingly and get the government funding that they need for their institutions. And as long as one or two key issues are taken care of, such as Shabbat observance and things of that sort of nature, they have one or two key kind of political criteria, but the rest is really all about government funding. You may recall back in the 80s and 90s, when there were attempts to try to change things around by looking at different styles of election. I mean, currently we have the proportionate representation system. There was talk about looking at different styles of government rather than the proportionate representation. We've lifted up the minimum threshold for small parties to be allowed to take up seats in the Knesset in an attempt to try to change the style of budget. We even had an election back in the 90s when there was an election for directly for prime minister, rather than the largest party simply nominates a prime minister, that the people of the country voted not only for the representation in the Knesset, but also voted directly for the prime minister, as the way they do in the United States. That only took place once and was scrapped immediately as a disaster and a failure. So I'm not sure what the right answers are. It would be really, really nice as a citizen of this country, I feel, if we had a parliamentarian who represented our constituency, as is the way that it used to be in South Africa, and is the way, for example, that it operates in the UK, where you have a constituency and you have a parliamentarian who represents your constituency, and you vote for him, and if you've got issues, you approach him directly. That has a certain positive ring about it. I'm not sure how it would work in Israel, but certainly there's been a lot of brain power devoted to thinking about different ways of government. I'm not sure that this problem can be solved, because you've got a nation of Jews, most of whom have at least two opinions on every subject, and you don't know which one is going to come out in the election.
Absolutely. Not a simple story at all. A delegation of 40 people arrived in Israel yesterday, that's from Bahrain, to discuss the development of closer ties between the two countries.
So again, we're seeing just this closeness, this development that's going on between Bahrain and, of course, Abu Dhabi and other Emirate countries since the signing of these peace agreements. Foreign Minister Gabi Ashkenazi had been due to be in Bahrain this week, but his trip was cancelled without any reason given. But we sort of wonder whether they might have felt that it was too much of a risk for him to travel abroad, given the events of last Friday and given the current security instability that we're seeing, a little bit of concern about the security of Israeli interests, particularly abroad and in Israel. So Gabi Ashkenazi is very much in Israel this week, and instead a delegation which is led by the Industry, Commerce and Tourism Minister, Zayed bin Rashid Al Zayani, landed at Ben Gurion Airport yesterday. He's leading 40 people. The delegation will meet with both Gabi Ashkenazi, our foreign minister. They will meet with Prime Minister Netanyahu today. Apparently, the two countries are due to sign a memorandum of understanding that includes the establishment of a bilateral forum to promote mutual tourism. There has already been massive tourism to Bahrain and to the Gulf countries since the signing of those agreements only a couple of months ago now. But apparently, according to our tourism minister, that he's just made a statement saying that over the last 2 months, both countries have been working really hard to turn peace from an idea to reality. So there's going to be a lot of work on the tourism and economic interest side. And of course, you know, within the context of establishment of these full diplomatic relations that Bahrain has agreed to establish with Israel. Interestingly, I heard a rumor somewhere that a lot of ultra-Orthodox weddings are now taking place in Bahrain and in the Gulf because, of course, in Israel, there is a limit as to the number of people that can attend weddings. And apparently, people are transshipping their weddings over there. It's only a few hours' flight. Things are open right now, although there are rumors that Bahrain will become a red country soon due to the increase in the infection rate of coronavirus there. I hope that that's not down to the number of Israeli tourists who've been visiting. Interesting, just another little angle on this particular subject was a fascinating story that I read about a Bahraini who came to Jerusalem to go to Al-Aqsa and had to hide himself away, had to pretend that he wasn't a Bahraini for fear that the Palestinian Arabs, Muslims, would openly revolt against him because there is this fatwa, there is this banning order that has been issued by the Mufti of Jerusalem banning Muslims coming from Gulf countries in the context of this peace agreement with Israel to pray at Al-Aqsa. And so people who come from those Gulf countries wanting to pray at Al-Aqsa, which is a very big deal for them and one of the big drivers behind this peace agreement is to allow the flow of Muslim tourism backwards and forwards to visit Jerusalem. Those people are now having to go undercover onto the Al-Aqsa and onto the Temple Mount for fear that the local Palestinian Muslims will actually hurt them or somehow respond to them negatively because of this fatwa.
That is that's really, really scary and quite sad. I guess it'll take time. I guess it'll take time to switch the perception and the whole idea that actually people can live in peace and Palestinian rights don't need to come at the expense of anybody, specifically Israelis and Jews. Once people can live alongside each other in peace, wow, almost anything can happen.
I think more than that, I think that instead of looking at the threat that this particular peace agreement presents to the Palestinian Authority, they're not looking at the opportunity that it presents to them. And I think that if they viewed it in a slightly more positive way, they may well be able to really, you know, supposedly jump on the bandwagon and really gain some very, very positive things from it. I think that they're looking at it completely from the wrong angle, but that's, you know, my own humble opinion.
Absolutely. Tel Aviv is the fifth most expensive city in the world. That's according to The Economist. Oh, wow. What are the largest contributors to Tel Aviv being such an expensive city?
Would you have thought so, Howard, if someone had said to you, where does Tel Aviv rate on the list of most expensive cities in the world?
I actually have a son who lives in Tel Aviv, and when I hear some of when I talk to him about some of the expenses, including rent, it actually doesn't surprise me.
Okay. I was a little surprised by that. I mean, of course, I know that Israel is an enormously expensive city, a country to live in general, and Tel Aviv in particular, because of the issue of housing and the cost of housing. But I think the main contributor this year to Tel Aviv actually moving up two places on the list last year was seventh, this year tied with Osaka in Japan for fifth place. I think the, one of the biggest contributors is really the strength of the currency. I mean, we're seeing the shekel at one of its highest rates ever, shekel 30 to the US dollar, which is just unbelievable. I can't recall when last the rate was really that strong for the shekel, and I think that this is one of the biggest contributors. It's also interesting to see which other countries, which other cities are on that list. The first place, interestingly, is shared by Zurich and Paris, and they were both, neither of them were on the top of the list last year. I think they were both fourth or fifth last year. Hong Kong is second, third, because Zurich and Paris are first, tied, and then Hong Kong is third. And then we get to Osaka and Tel Aviv, which is really, really crazy. And of course, New York is in there as well. Singapore, last year shared top spot with Osaka, and Singapore is in fourth spot this year. So those are really the main cities. New York is actually down three places. It's only in seventh place with Geneva. Sydney's 15th. London is 20th. And Moscow is 106th. So those are kind of the cities. But I think the main contributor really is the currency. No doubt that all services and all goods that are bought in Tel Aviv are enormously expensive. People who visited here will tell you that to go out and have a meal when restaurants will be open, were open, is not a cheap thing, particularly for tourists. I think that locals feel it a little less, even though salaries in Israel are not very, very high on a global scale. I think that when tourists come here and spend their hard-earned money from abroad at the exchange rate that they're getting at the moment, then people are honestly very, very surprised. And I'm assuming, Howard, that when you do your numbers, you're using an exchange rate on the day to convert it to currency that you understand. And that's where the whole thing really comes apart because of the strength of the shekel. So apparently Tel Aviv is an enormously expensive city to live in, and it doesn't help tourism, and yet when we're open for business tourist-wise, it's a very, very popular destination.
And a very beautiful one. It really, really is. It is 8:01. Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, we'll catch you with the Israel Report tomorrow morning, same time, same place.